The headlines: Russian President Vladimir Putin signs decrees paving the way for the accession of four Ukrainian regions to Russia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky announces Kiev's application for accelerated membership in the Western Military Alliance, NATO. And also, at least 20 people are killed, many more wounded in a suicide attack on an education center in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Our top story for this half-hour: Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed a decree for the formal accession of four Ukrainian regions to Russia.
President Российской Федерации Владимир Владимирович Путин, глава Донецкой Народной Республики Денис Владимирович Пушилин.
Today we signed the treaties on the admission of the Donetsk and Luhansk republics, of the Zaporizhia region and Kherson region into Russia.
In a speech at the Kremlin, Putin said people in the four regions of Kherson, Zaporizhia, Donetsk and Luhansk will remain Russian citizens forever. Putin pointed to the referendums held in the four regions, saying Ukraine has to respect the will of the people. The president vowed to defend the Russian land with all means available. Russia says people in the four regions have voted overwhelmingly to join the Russian Federation. Ukraine says it is applying for fast-track NATO military alliance membership following Moscow's formal integration of four Ukrainian regions into Russia. President Volodymyr Zelensky says or also ruled out any negotiations with Moscow as long as Russian President Vladimir Putin is in office. Russia's move has also triggered strong reactions from Ukraine's Western allies. U.S. President Joe Biden said Washington will never recognize what he called Russia's annexation of Ukrainian land. The White House has also announced severe new sanctions against Russia. The U.K. has also slapped fresh bans on Russia. Elsewhere, the European Union has vowed to never recognize the absorption and accused the Kremlin of jeopardizing global security. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has described the move as a, quote, dangerous escalation. We've talked to political commentator Greg Simons about the integration of some Ukrainian regions, including Donbass, into Russia. He says the Ukrainian government's attitude towards people in the Donbass region has aroused anti-Kiev sentiments over the past years.
There has been a gradual and incremental increase of what has been called as a Ukrainianization policy, which has been going even around 2004 by the time of the Orange Revolution, which has been vastly accelerated after the US and EU-backed 2014 Euromaidan. So, and if we look back to 2014, when there was this break, I mean, how did Ukrainian government define people in Donbass? Well, they defined it by saying they had an anti-terrorist operation, and they shelled that area for 8 years. On the one hand, you've got these legal arguments, which are not evenly applied, where the UN is on the one hand talking about or criticizing one, but absolutely silent on others, and this emotional one, where these people do not feel safe, and they would probably be massacred based on what has been happening on these reconquered territories in the Kharkiv offensive.
Inflation has been roiling the Eurozone economy for months. Official data now shows that consumer prices rate has nudged up to its highest level in the history of the euro. The Statistical Office of the European Union, Eurostat, says The year-on-year inflation jumped to a record 10% in September. There are also fears of a recession as the European Central Bank is expected to stick to tightening monetary policy and continue to further increase interest rates. The inflation is believed to stem from a 40% hike in energy prices in the wake of the Ukraine war. Costs of energy have become almost the number one issue for households all across Europe. EU countries have come up with measures to mitigate high electricity prices. They include mandatory electricity demand reduction.
Anger is rising in France over the country's deepening economic woes. Hundreds of protesters have gathered to demand higher wages and pensions. Street demonstrations were also held in other French cities in what is the first major strike since Emmanuel Macron won the re-election as president in April. Unions also called for the scrapping of Macron's plans to raise the retirement age from 62 to 65. Protesters are angry over the government's failure to live up to its promises. The unemployment rate in France inched up to 7.4% in the second quarter of 2022, from 7.3% in the previous quarter. The annual inflation rate in France is to 5.9% in August of 2022, from 6.1% in July, but it is still higher than initial estimates of 5.8%. But France is not the only European country to experience tough economic times. Germany, which is the EU's economic powerhouse, is also experiencing a high inflation rate, which increased to a record 10% in September. The news comes after economic institutes predicted the economy to shrink next year. The soaring price of energy weighs on households and businesses. There are now concerns of widespread bankruptcies and factory shutdowns. And in the UK, Prime Minister Liz Truss is facing tough economic times. She has pressed ahead with her economic plan to cut taxes and insists that she has made the right decision. But this decision is said to make the rich have tax breaks and will increase inequality in the country and weigh down on the middle and poorer classes. The Bank of England has stepped in with a £65 billion emergency bond buying program in the UK as part of efforts to quell a market meltdown. The former governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, has accused Liz Truss's government of undercutting the country's economic institutions.
Imports are obviously going to go up in price. Exporting is going to be more difficult. Added to that, the effects of Brexit, which are coming down the line straight for us. And I think we're going to be in serious trouble over the next couple of years.
I think it's obvious that there's some sort of recession coming, right? If it's not already here, we'll just have to work through it. I think, arguably, you have to keep spending to try and bring it back, but it's difficult to see. I mean, business is still there, right? The work's still happening. Everyone's still recovering from COVID, spending the money they didn't spend. So the work's still there. People are just being more frugal and a bit more considerate.
Amid widespread protests, there are now concerns of the rise of far-right groups in Europe.
One of the European countries that is experiencing severe economic crisis is the UK. UK Prime Minister's new tax cut plan, which is set to benefit the rich over the poor, is projected to adversely impact the economy. Meanwhile, inflation in German economy continues to rise. Things are so dire in Europe that the situation mirrors the financial crisis back in 2008.
The grim economic outlook in Europe comes amid warnings of a looming economic recession. The head of the World Trade Organization says the world is sliding into a recession due to multiple overlapping crises. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund have also downgraded their global growth forecasts. The recession is a result of a number of factors that have compounded each other. The recession has been triggered by an energy crunch, surging food prices, and bottlenecks in global trade.
The world is in a very difficult place at this time. We have a situation in which we are grappling with multiple crises. I often refer to it as a poly-crisis, simultaneous exogenous shocks hitting the world. We have security shocks, we have climate shocks, we have energy shocks, we have food price shocks, and all of this hitting countries at the same time. So we cannot afford to do business as usual.
If energy prices, if there's disruptions during winter, And the energy prices go up even further. We have a scenario in which an increase in 50% of gas prices will lead to a reduction in GDP in Europe by 1.4%. And so this is a huge number. So that means that the European economy for sure will be in recession.
Some of these factors were triggered by the COVID-19 pandemic, but the Ukraine war has made them worse. China's pandemic policies and rampant inflation have worsened the economic outlook. But investors are particularly concerned about the prospect of interest rates in the U.S.
Just as U.S. investors are completely comfortable with the Fed's strategy, there's now this concern that the rest of the world is not following on. So it's a real concern about the resolve of European central banks to fight inflation, and particularly the UK, and how that might spread to others.
If Federal Reserve raises interest rates aggressively, the U.S. could head into a recession, which could have significant ramifications not only for the U.S., but also its allies in Europe.
Iran has defended its military operation against terrorist hideouts in the northern Iraqi region of Kurdistan. It says the attacks are in line with international law and the United Nations Charter. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman says his country will defend its national security against acts of aggression originating in any territory and will firmly counter any act of terrorism. Nasser Kanani also slammed Western country statements and positions on the military operation. The Iranian official singled out the U.S. and Germany, saying they evade their international responsibilities in fighting terrorism by exhibiting selective, biased behavior. Tehran says the targeted terror outfits, including the so-called Komala Party, carry out terrorist operations on Iranian soil and foment unrest in the country. Iran's military has warned that it will retaliate if U.S. claims of downing an Iranian drone in the Iraqi Kurdistan region are confirmed. The chief of staff of Iranian Armed Forces says it reserves the right to counter and avenge the hostile move and will deliver the response in due time. Major General Mohammad Bagheri added that the U.S. claim shows that it's in cahoots with terrorists and separatists. Bagheri said Iran is currently engaged in a harsh military campaign against separatists and terrorists in northern Iraq and isn't conducting any operation against Americans at this point. He stressed, however, that Iran has full intelligence command over U.S. military bases in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. In southeast Iran, gunmen have attacked a police station in the city of Zahedan, prompting security forces to return fire. Provincial officials say some terrorists tried to disrupt security in the city, but the situation is now under control. The officials said gunmen opened fire and threw Molotov cocktails at the police station but failed to enter it. They added that a number of police officers as well as passers-by were injured in the attack. Media reports say gunmen also attacked a fire engine, an emergency center, and a bank, among other places. The attacks occurred shortly after Friday prayer. Zahedan is located in Sistan and Balochistan province, which borders Pakistan and Afghanistan. And at least 20 people are killed, many more wounded, in a suicide attack on an education center in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Rahmatullah Bahwan reports.
Another black day for the residents of the west of Kabul. Today morning, a bomb hit the Qaj Educational Center in Dasht-e-Barchi area in Shia Hazara neighborhoods. The students were sitting a practice university exam when the explosion went off. The victims of the incident were taken to the hospital. Their relatives report a high number of casualties.
My sister and my cousin were brought here to the emergency hospital. They are now in critical health conditions. They were at the educational center for their exams. As I witnessed, the victims were all innocent people. I saw nearly 60 to 70 people dead and wounded in one individual hospital.
Terrified, Muhammad Issa has brought his wounded knees to this hospital. He calls on the Taliban and the global community to do something to help get rid of such attacks.
I saw a lot of people killed or injured. It was very shocking. I visited the educational center. Scores of bodies were laid on the floor. People are terrified. I don't know why there is no end to our suffering. They attack us everywhere. Till when? I call on the global community to do something for the situation of Afghan people, especially Hazaras.
Taliban security officials are visiting the site of the explosion. They say they will take all necessary steps for tightening security for all.
Islamic Emirate is watchful for the security of the people, especially in western Kabul. I promise that everything will come under our control and such incidents won't happen in the future. Such attacks on innocent students are carried out by the enemies of Islam and the people of Afghanistan.
Mosques and educational centers in Shia Hazara neighborhoods in Kabul have been the target of terrorist attacks for years. The Daesh terrorist group have claimed responsibility for most of such attacks. People here in western Kabul say the seemingly endless violence has exhausted them. They want peace, security, and justice. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Well, the World Health Organization has warned of a worrying upsurge in cholera outbreaks across the world. The WHO says 26 countries have reported cholera outbreaks in the first 9 months of 2022 alone. The UN agency contrasted this with the 2017 to 2021 period when fewer than 20 countries reported outbreaks of the disease per year. It said the average fatality rate of the disease is also rising. The WHO blamed the surge in outbreaks on extreme climate change events alongside traditional triggers such as poverty and conflict. Cholera is spread by the ingestion of contaminated food or water. Flood cyclones and droughts reduce the access to clean water and create an ideal environment for the disease to thrive. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Israel's crimes against Palestinian children reflect the regime's sadistic policies against civilians. Hamas emphasized that Israel's crimes against Palestinian children, people, land, and sanctities will not make the regime secure but only strengthen the resistance. It has also called on international rights organizations to take serious action to blacklist Israeli leaders over the killing of children. The movement was reacting to the death of 7-year-old Rayan Soleiman, who died of heart attack after being chased by Israeli forces. The United States has called for a thorough and immediate investigation into the circumstances surrounding the child's death. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The world's top four grain traders, which have dominated the global grain market for decades, have seen record or near-record profits or sales. They are forecasting demand to outstrip supply at least until 2024, which is likely to lead to even higher sales and higher profits in the next 2 years. We now present you an article written by Fiona Harvey. The piece is titled, Record Profits for Grain Firms Amid Food Crisis Prompt Calls for Windfall Tax. Companies at the center of the global grain trade have enjoyed a record bonanza amid soaring food prices around the world, raising concerns of profiteering and speculation in global food markets that could put staples beyond the reach of the poorest and prompting calls for a windfall tax. The world's top four grain traders, which have dominated the global grain market for decades, have seen record or near-record profits or sales. They are forecasting demand to outstrip supply at least until 2024, which is likely to lead to even higher sales and higher profits over the next 2 years. According to the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization, FAO, food prices have surged more than 20% this year. According to the World Food Program, WFP, about 345 million people are experiencing acute food insecurity, compared with 135 million people before the COVID-19 pandemic. Olivier de Schutter, a co-chair of the IPES Food, the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, IPES Food, and United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, said, "The fact that global commodity giants are making record profits at a time when hunger is rising is clearly unjust and is a terrible indictment of our food systems. What's even worse, these companies could have done more to prevent the hunger crisis in the first place." Four companies, the Archer Daniels Midlands Company, Bunge, Cargill, and Louis Dreyfus, known collectively as ABCD, control an estimated 70 to 90% of the global grain trade. Olivier de Schutter, the co-chair of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, said, "Global grain markets are even more concentrated than energy markets and even less transparent, so there is a huge risk of profiteering." Olivier de Schutter said this year's food price surge happened despite what are thought to be abundant global grain reserves, but there was insufficient transparency from the companies to show how much grain they hold and no way to force them to release stocks in a timely fashion. Olivier de Schutter added, "We need to be looking at the grain giants and asking what they could have done to avert the crisis, and what they could be doing right now." Cargill reported a 23% increase in revenues to a record $165 billion for the year ending 31st of May, while Archer Daniels Midland made the highest profit in its history during the second quarter of this year. Sales at Bunge surged by 17% year-on-year in the second quarter, though its profits were affected by previously incurred charges. Louis Dreyfus reported profits for 2021 up by more than 80% on the previous year, as revenues rose by nearly a quarter to $1.62 billion. John Rogers, an analyst at the credit rating service Moody's, said, "It was not surprising that supply constraints and rebounding demand had increased food prices and led to higher profits." John Rogers claimed, "I don't think they're colluding for outsized profits," adding that many more companies were also taking an increasing share of global grain markets. John Rogers claimed, "I don't think they're acting immorally. They're not intentionally driving up prices." He said the profits for grain companies had been increasing overall but their margins had not markedly increased in percentage terms, adding, "This is a relatively efficient market. I don't think these guys can ramp up the prices." However, unpublished analysis by a non-governmental organization seen by The Guardian suggests that some food companies may be increasing their profit margins too. The analysis found Archer's Daniel Midland increased its profit margin to 4.46% in the first quarter of this year, up from 3.65% in the same quarter in 2021. And Cargill's profit margin increased from 2.5% last year to 3.2% this year. Sandra Martinson, a policy manager at Bond, a network of international development charities, said a windfall tax would be a way to restore some balance to food markets and help the poorest. Sandra Martinson said the big agri-food companies are clearly capitalizing on the reduced supply and increased demand, further exacerbated by commodity trading. She added, "When supply is significantly lower than demand, it gives space for price increases. But this is also exacerbated by speculative stock markets, since wheat and other commodities are traded in stock markets and therefore prices fluctuate." Oxfam has also called for a windfall tax on food companies' profits. Alex Maitland, a senior advisor at Oxfam, said, "There are fears that speculation could be a driver in food price rises. Anything that causes hunger and starvation is immoral." Natalie Bennett, a UK Green Party peer, joined the call. She said, "As a short-term measure, there are strong arguments for a windfall tax on the food oligopolies. The handful of companies with significant cross-ownership from hedge funds and from seeds to supermarkets are major contributors to the inflation that's driving the cost of living crisis to new heights." Vicky Hurd, the head of sustainable farming at the UK food coalition Sustain, stopped short of calling for a windfall tax, as she said it was hard to separate out the price effects in supermarkets where consumers buy most of their food. But she called for the British government to regulate to stop abuse. She said, "While farmers, consumers and food workers are suffering in the face of spiralling food prices and fuel prices, those sitting in the middle of the food chain, a small number of huge dominant grain traders, are raking in vast profits." Sandra Martinson said if government rejects a windfall tax, they should consider other means to curb prices, including price caps or tighter regulation on commodity trading, such as the ban on commodity trading introduced in India to limit inflation and price hikes. Sandra Martinson said food companies and commodity speculators were also blamed for fueling the food price rises seen more than a decade ago, when surging prices led to riots in many countries. The causes of the food price rises are complex. The war in Ukraine has played a big part, as Ukraine is one of the world's top producers of grain, sunflower oil, maize, and fertilizer. The war sent food prices soaring to their highest ever levels in March, though some have fallen back slightly since then. A standoff with Russia over moving grain shipments from Ukraine for export has been partially resolved, and some shipments have now moved. But harvests from Ukraine and Russia will be affected this year as well as next year. Rising energy and fertilizer prices, which have also spiraled due to Russia's special operation in Ukraine, have an impact, while the rebound in demand after COVID lockdowns has added further pressure. Grain harvests in Europe, in North America and India have also been affected by the climate crisis. Last year's heat waves in Canada hurt wheat crop yields in Canada, and high temperatures and wildfires this year are likely to inflict damage. This all adds up to a rosy picture for grain producers. Demand for their product is surging, supplies are constrained, and despite rising input prices in the form of energy and fertilizer, their profits look secure. The Guardian contacted all four of the ABCD companies for comment, but has not received any replies. Olivier de Schutter said, "Ultimately, we need to break up the monopolies that have a stranglehold on the food chain. A handful of companies control global seed and fertilizer markets, animal genetics, the global grain trade, and food retail. They're making huge profits at the cost of farmers, at the cost of consumers and the environment." In Britain, food prices have risen for many staples, adding to woes over energy prices that are set to top £3,500 a year this winter for the average British household. Poverty campaigners have warned people are facing harsh choices this winter over whether to eat or to heat their homes.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the Minbar you are listening to. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
So none of what we're going to talk about is going to discount love of Ahlul Bayt. Okay? Sheer love of Ahlul Bayt. If someone only has that, nothing else. But the Imams themselves have spoken. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has spoken about love of Ahlul Bayt, what it's supposed to entail. And yes, this is cliche, maybe. Love is not just to love, it's more than that. But let's see what it's supposed to entail and what the rewards are for what we're supposed to look like as a result of the love that we have for Ahlul Bayt. This hadith is by Abu Sa'id al-Khudri, the famous companion of Rasulullah. He says, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ ﷺ مَنْ رَزَقَهُ اللَّهُ حُبَّ الْأَئِمَّ مِنْ أَهْلِ بَيْتِي فَقَدْ أَصَابَ خَيْرَ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. That the Prophet said, whoever has love of my Ahlul Bayt, the Imams of my Ahlul Bayt, this person, Asaba, has hit the target when it comes to the khair and good of dunya and akhirah, both. And so the hadith goes on, the Prophet says, there are 10 things though, of the dunya that this person will get, and there are 10 things of the akhirah that this person will get. Inshallah, we'll go through these tonight quickly with a little bit of commentary on each one. But I want you to pay attention here. As we start listening to what the Prophet has to say in this regard, all right, 10 things in dunya. Okay, what are those 10 things? Probably health, wealth, wife, life, husband, good husband, you know, the one that comes on a white horse that Allah sends from the sky, which never happens. Yes, marriage is all about getting along with each other. That white horse thing isn't going to happen, really. Anyway, all of these things, those are the things of the dunya, correct? So we're expecting something like this as a result of hubb of Ahlul Bayt. And then akhirah, of course, we know what that's all about, right? But now let's see the words of the Holy Prophet. The Prophet here seems like he is using the words he's using in a certain way. Because when we're expecting these benefits, dunyawi benefits, and we have a certain thing in mind, look at what he says. He begins, number one. Oh, and before he begins, he says, فَلَا يَشُكَّنَّ أَحَدٌ أَنَّهُ فِي الْجَنَّةِ. The person who has love of my Ahlul Bayt, there's no doubt that they're going to be in Jannah. All right. So how do we identify this individual? How can we tell if this individual... You're telling us there's going to be 10 indicators. All right, let's see who's wealthy, who's healthy, who's this, who's that. And we can be sure that they're going to be in Jannah. But he begins. He says, 10 of them in the dunya, 10 of them in the akhirah, as for those that are in the dunya. Number one, hub of my Ahlul Bayt is going to have the benefit of az-zuhd fi dunya. Wow. Love of Ahlul Bayt will entail the fact that I'm not too interested in this dunya. I will chase the dunya to the amount that I need, because Allah said so, Ahlul Bayt said so. But look, brothers and sisters, when you love someone, but that person is not interested in somebody else, are you going to be interested in that somebody else? No. Yeah? Oh my God, this guy is the coolest guy in school. This guy doesn't like to hang out with those people. I want to be with this guy. Am I going to hang out with those people too? No. So it says here that this person that is in love with Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, the first thing is you start noticing in them, what benefit? Wealth, health. You notice in them the fact that they aren't too interested. Yes, they will go after it because they have to an extent. But zuhd doesn't mean not possessing. What does zuhd mean? It means not being inclined towards something. And of course, let me open a parenthesis here. Sometimes some of us, we will kind of fool ourselves. We'll say, we'll have the best stuff that one can have. I'd be like, zuhd is me not being attached. But I can have, right? It's true. But brothers and sisters, when you're not interested in something, come on, like, it's not going to show too much. The opposite will not show too much either. Who are we kidding? But anyway, every person can judge themselves. The Quran says, بَلِ الْإِنسَانُ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ بَصِيرَةً وَلَوْ أَلْقَى مَعَذِيرَةً. That every person knows what's going on inside them. Even though they might make excuses, we all know what's going on in our hearts. Yes, there will be a Prophet Sulaiman who has everything you could ask for on the face of the earth. He is Zahid still. You'll have Ali ibn Abi Talib during his time. Before Khilafat, he has some possessions. After his Khilafat, almost nothing he possesses. We know this person is also Zahid. So yes, at the end of the day, Zuhd, I would say, is a state of mind. Attachment. There will be people who will have a lot more, and really they are Zahid still. And there are people who have, as Imam Khomeini said, they'll have a little tasbih even, and they're so attached to that tasbih. Or a cloak that they're so attached to, and so on and so forth. So that state of mind, a person who's a lover of Ahlul Bayt sees what they're interested in, what they're in love with, and they are more inclined towards that. These individuals were inclined towards Akhirah more than anything else. All right, so that will equal Zuhd. Number one. Number two, Al-Hirsu ala al-Amal. Number two, they say Amir al-Mu'min alayhi salam, he was the hardest worker of his time. Ayatollah Makarim, he has done the math. He's done the math. When? In the 50s, I think it was, when last I checked. Right now we're in 2021. In the 50s, he had done the math and converted to a dollar amount or toman amount, whatever you want to use, currency. The wealth that Imam Ali was generating, all right? This is important. Sometimes you possess something. Sometimes you use it. Imam Ali is generating wealth for the Muslims. Working hard. There's one story. I love this story. It says he came. His servant was there. This is like in the fields. He comes. He says, what do we have for food? He says, we have this for food. It's like some squash dish or something. Something made out of squash, kadu. The imam, he says, all right, let's have that. He says, no, that's not befitting of the khalifa. Imam is like, really? You're going to say that to me? Give me what we got. The imam has a meal, puts his sleeves up, gets to work, starts digging, digging, digging. Comes out, he is drenched in sweat, goes back down, digging, digging, digging. They say Imam Ali jumps out all of a sudden. And then water gushes out. Yeah, he had hit water. Okay, back then having a well equaled kind of like having an oil minefield, whatever today. This is worth a lot of money. Back then, that was everything. This individual works hard, generates wealth for them. And then right away he says, this is for the fuqara of Medina. This is for the poor individuals of Medina. I am dedicating it to them. Now hear this, man. Hear this. Ali ibn Abi Talib, he writes, Ali ibn Abi Talib dedicates this to the fuqara of Medina so that on the day of judgment, his face is saved from the hellfire. Subhanallah. What's he teaching us? With amal, he secures akhirah. Number two on the list here, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says, a person who loves Ahlul Bayt, he has al-hirsu ala al-amal. This person is obsessed with working. Not obsessed in a bad way, of course, although hirs does have negative connotations. But the Prophet here is illustrating a point to us that these people, for them, it's hard work, number one. And also, amal can refer to action versus just sitting there and thinking that I'm a holy person, but I don't do ibadah properly, I don't do other things properly. Yes. So number two, I love Ahlul Bayt. That's why I'm a love work, because they were hard workers themselves. I don't get it, brothers and sisters. I just don't get it. Alhamdulillah, I spent half my life in another third world country. All right. So for me, I saw the struggles of the people. When you come back, you see some people, they don't know what's going on other places. Bro, you're 25 years old. You're still playing video games 6 hours a day. When are you going to get married? When are you going to get a job? When are you going to get an education, a degree, whatever it is? I don't know. Do something. You do something, you'll get results. Al-hirsu ala al-amal. Now some here, someone might say, oh, okay, so he's calling out video games. No, no, no. It's fine. That's fine. If you figured out other aspects of life, inshallah.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Puerto Rico is suffering from the consequences of another major hurricane. Hurricane Fiona brings the experiences of the past with itself. Weak infrastructure, discrimination, and inequality in Puerto Rico. Stay tuned for the first part, please. In this regard, the website of Axios wrote, Puerto Ricans are scrambling to figure out how or whether to rebuild after yet another major disaster. There are some issues, including a state of play. About 33% of homes and businesses were still without power recently, more than a week after Hurricane Fiona hit, according to Luma Energy, the island's grid operator. Thousands still don't have running water. Some roads remain blocked by flooding and rock slides, leaving several communities in the south isolated, without access to supplies. Driving the news, while Fiona, a Category 1 hurricane when it made landfall, was considerably weaker than 2017's hurricanes Maria and Irma, both Category 5 storms, its devastation is expected to compound the already strained recovery efforts from the past disasters. Estimates put the damages of Hurricane Maria at $100 billion. About $28 billion in federal funds had been earmarked for recovery projects at the beginning of August. Many homes destroyed by Maria and the island's power grid were still being rebuilt when Fiona hit. Plus, the pandemic hit Puerto Rico's economy especially hard. More than 40% of the island's population lived below the poverty line last year, according to census data. For small business owners, the cascade of disasters on top of the island's long-standing bankruptcy issues has made even the thought of rebuilding again hard to bear. This is the fifth time everything floods, the fifth time I lose it. Carmelo Varquez Rivera, who owns a TV and electronics repair shop, told Noticias Telemundo after Fiona hit, adding, "I've started back up before, but this time I just don't have the strength." The big picture. A U.S. Congress-established financial oversight board nicknamed La Junta remains mostly in charge of the island's budget. La Junta has been criticized by some lawmakers who argue the board's austerity measures after Hurricane Maria made recovery harder. La Junta agreed to release up to $250,000 to each of Puerto Rico's 78 municipalities for Fiona's recovery. President Biden also approved a major disaster declaration for the island and ordered federal aid to assist with recovery efforts. But many worry the money and declaration won't be enough, especially for an island with a history of corruption, delays in aid distribution, and budgetary mismanagement. Others have taken authorities to task for not enacting more programs that could make the island more resilient. There should have been more investments in weather-resistant designs of roads and the grid line. Martha Quinones, professor at the Universidad de Puerto Rico, told El Nuevo Día. Puerto Rican authorities in 2019 set a goal of transitioning to renewable power by 2050, which would help more people weather the storms by having a grid that doesn't get as easily knocked down by winds and rain. But as of February, about 3% of the island's electricity comes from renewables, mostly pushed by NGOs working with solar power. There is also a concern that the island will continue to experience the brain drain that worsened after Hurricanes Maria and Irma. The island saw an 11.8% drop in its population between 2010 and 2020, according to census data. Part of that is due to the island's struggling economy made worse by crisis after crisis. Many people who have remained on the island have been pushed out of their homes by land developers and cryptocurrency investors who have bought out apartment buildings and other properties, making rents soar and prompting more Puerto Ricans to leave for the mainland U.S. The bottom line, the island was still years away from fully recovering from Maria and Irma when Fiona hit. Those recovery efforts are expected to take longer now, leaving many Puerto Ricans fearing for when the next disaster may strike. Politico also writes, "What up, recast family? President Joe Biden declares the pandemic is over and questions arise over weather. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis had the budget authority to fly migrants to Martha's Vineyard. Plus, Adnan Said, whose case inspired the Megate podcast serial, is freed from prison. First, though, we focus on the latest unfolding in Puerto Rico. The latest collapse of Puerto Rico's power grid after it was thrashed by Hurricane Fiona over the weekend was a foreseeable crisis that activists, including Puerto Rican Bunny, have been working to prevent a crisis deeply rooted in the island's status as a U.S. territory. Turn back the calendar to 5 years ago today. Hurricane Maria, coming less than 2 weeks after Hurricane Irma, was the strongest hurricane to hit the island in nearly a century. The website of Politico wrote, Maria, a category 4 storm that caused an estimated 2,975 deaths, decimated Puerto Rico's power, water, healthcare systems. The island has never truly recovered from that blow. In those intervening years, those living on the island have had to endure multiple crises, including earthquakes that further destabilized the power grid, not to mention the COVID-19 pandemic. With Fiona, the island suffered yet another total blackout when the then Category 1 storm knocked out power to 1.5 million customers, dumped some 32 inches of rain on some parts of the island, and triggered catastrophic flooding and widespread loss of water service.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is Taqwa, Thursday the 2nd of Ramadan, 1394, 19 September, 1974. 700 million Muslims are sitting just waiting for God's mercy to come to them, and allowing people to violate their dignity, trample upon their faith, and take everything they have. Are you sitting hoping for God's mercy in these circumstances? In that case, you may as well get comfortable. Allah says, "And obey Allah and the Apostle so that you may be granted His mercy." What does it mean to obey Allah? In what are we supposed to obey Him? To convey all of the divine duties and proofs to the enemy, to do our duty, whatever that may be. Allah says in the Quran that the truly faithful are those who, when any dispute occurs between them, they refer it to God's messenger, and when the messenger judges between them, they do not find in their hearts any dissent to your verdict, and submit to it in full submission. This is the mark of a true believer. If there were a people or a nation, if there were a society that obeyed God in this manner, that is when His limitless mercy and kindness would surround them. That is when these people would attain dignity. That is when these people would grow to be fully fledged human beings. That is when they would be freed from the chains and fetters that bind them. That is when they would receive God's mercy.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
So, and obey Allah and the Apostle, so that you may be granted His mercy. And hasten towards your Lord's forgiveness and a paradise as vast as the heavens and the earth, prepared for the God-weary. The Quran, Surah 3, verse 133. Here we see that Allah not only gives one example of taqwa, but also describes a consequence of it. Then He mentions further examples of what constitutes taqwa below. In this world, many are willing to race each other to gain ownership of a plot of land, which is only a bit of water and dirt, and they are ready to overtake others for this. They are ready to give all of their strength and energy so that, as well as obtaining the land, they are able to make a living from it. Perhaps to run a shop, to gain the ear of a powerful person, or to manage a company somewhere in the world, to gain whatever material advantages they can. For these things, you are ready to race, to leave others behind, even if it means trampling on all virtues and dignities in the process.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
This is IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.